The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Beautiful day here at Edstone, our wonderful campus across the pond from our headquarters campus in Edmond, Oklahoma. Well, you look at the world today, it does make you think, or at least it makes me think quite often of Matthew chapter 9, the last few verses there. Just to paraphrase a bit of it, Jesus walking through the cities and the villages, teaching God's truth, preaching the gospel, the soon coming gospel of the kingdom of God, healing, it says, healing every sickness and every disease among the people. We certainly need that. But it says here, Matthew 9:36, but when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep, having no shepherd. They have no shepherd. They have no leadership. They're sheep, it says. Sheep without a leadership. And it moved Christ with compassion. And then he said to his disciples, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Pray you, therefore, the Lord of the harvest, that he will send forth laborers into the harvest. This was Christ's reaction. He looked at the sheep. He looked at the sickness. He looked at the fact that there's no leadership. And he said to the disciples of God, the disciples of Christ, he said to true Christians, this is why you need to pray for more laborers. This is why you need to pray for more people to come into God's church, because the harvest is plenteous, but the laborers are few. This work, God's work, is the only hope for this dying world. And that should be more obvious with every passing day. This world is exactly as Isaiah said that it would be. There's a sickness from head to toe. It starts with the head. It starts with the leadership. And all the leaders in the world today, for the most part, they're banding together. It's unusual to see them agree on very much of anything. But on this, they are in perfect agreement, for the most part. And that is that you are to be scared. You should be very scared right now. That's what the health officials are saying. That's what the commentators are saying. That's what world leaders are saying. If you're not in a state of constant anxiety or panic, then it might be you're part of the problem. Last week, as we covered on this program, the World Health Organization, it declared the coronavirus a pandemic. And then you had the speech, I believe, by President Trump on Wednesday night, where he talked about the travel ban, the added restrictions he was going to put on to traveling into and out of the United States. And then we come to Friday, and that's when he announces that it's now for the U.S. It's now a national emergency. Here's what he had to say, clip one.
To unleash the full power of the federal government in this effort today, I am officially declaring a national emergency. Two very big words.
That's President Trump. From Friday, two very big words, national emergency. And you look at the way the U.S. public has responded to that. Bill de Blasio, he declared a state of emergency for New York City just a day or two before that. And what did the people of New York do in response? Well, they rushed to the supermarkets and they started fighting over food and toilet paper and things of that nature. And that's the way America has responded to this emergency, to this global pandemic. On last week's program, I talked about the last global pandemic. The World Health Organization declared a global pandemic in 2009 because of the H1N1 virus, also known as the swine flu, and something like 15,000 Americans died as a result of that flu. And then I've talked to you some about just ordinary flu season. Sometimes it's worse than others. The tens of thousands of people that are killed every season because of the flu. And so far, again, we want to just try to establish some perspective here. But so far, the numbers for the coronavirus, they're nowhere near, not yet anyway, they're nowhere near what it was in 2009. Now, that doesn't mean people's lives haven't been affected by this. We've got some of our own brethren in Europe struggling with this sickness, older brethren, and it's life-threatening, as we've heard. It particularly targets the elderly. If the elderly come down with this virus, their lives, particularly if they have an underlying health condition, their lives are in danger. And yet, in God's church, in God's family, we do view death very differently than the people of this world. Look at the mass hysteria, though. Look at the leadership or lack thereof. There's no shepherds. The ones that are out there, out front, they're just saying you should panic. You should be afraid. I just, at the end of last week, this was Friday evening, I think around 9 p.m., I wrote down what the figures were on that that website that just gives you the daily rundown. How many people are infected by this virus? Friday evening, it was 137,000 known cases worldwide. And as of Friday night, there were 5,088 deaths. This morning, it was 169,000 cases and 6,500 confirmed deaths. So over the weekend, over the course of 2 days, 2.5 days, I guess it would be, Friday evening to Monday morning, there's something like 1,500 more. And of course, the big headline yesterday was what came out of Italy. I guess Spain, it doubled within 24 hours. 288 deaths in Spain. And then 368 in Italy alone just yesterday, which only added to the panic, which only added to the anxiety, which only escalated fears. And yet here again, when you step back, the death count in the United States is, I think it's at 67 right now. And that that elderly center in Kirkland, Washington, 29 have now died from that healthcare facility for elderly people. 67 people in a nation of 329 million. Now, as I said last week, you have 153,000 people on Earth every day who die. And when you break it down, the numbers of people dying of heart disease every day, 1,700 every single day from heart disease, 1,600 every single day dying from cancer. There's 123 just in America. Well, actually, these last two figures I gave you, this is just in America. 123 in America kill themselves every day. They commit suicide. You look at some of the global numbers. There's about 1,100 murders or homicides every day on Earth. In the U.S., it amounts to about 46 per day. 46. Last week, I talked about the number of shootings in Chicago every weekend. No news, no coverage. We don't zero in on every single case. We don't add last week's numbers to this week's numbers and give you the accumulative total of all year. Well, I guess there's a website or two that might do that, but certainly the major news media, they don't do it. Automobile accidents. We've talked about the death toll in the United States. As far as the world is concerned, it's estimated that there's 1.25 million people killed every year on roads in automobile accidents. That's an average of 3,287 deaths per day. Keep in mind, the total for the year on the coronavirus, we're at 6,500. And those are sad and tragic deaths. And so are the others. 3,287 per day. In the U.S., it's 103 people per day dying on roads. On roads. Now, you could keep going down the list as far as the World Health Organization is concerned. Some of them are... Well, they're not humorous by any means, but they're kind of foreign to the thinking of Westerners. The fact that it's estimated between 80 and 130,000 people die each year from snake bites. And then you add to that, it's about three times the number of deaths. Those people that either face some kind of amputation or lifelong disabilities as a result of poisonous snake bites. That's happening every day. 300 people per day dying of snake bites. So all of those other facts and figures, nothing to be concerned about there. But with respect to this virus, there should be a complete and total and widespread panic. And if you're not panicking, you're part of the problem. If you're not self-isolating, you're causing the problem. President Trump, in that same exchange, or after he declared the national emergency on Friday, listen to this reporter and the question she asked, clip two.
Why are you shaking hands, sir?
Because it almost becomes a habit.
Why is the President of the United States shaking hands? We're now at a point of social separation where, and I haven't really heard anyone clarify as to whether or not this is temporary. It seems like this is just the new norm. No more handshaking. Keep your distance from other people. Sneeze into the elbow. You know the drill. Wash your hands repeatedly. Peggy Noonan, in her column last week, she said, don't wash your hands. Wash your hands like Lady Macbeth with obsessive compulsive disorder. That's how we've got to purify our skin. She says, wash your face, carry hand sanitizers, and use them after every interaction. Wear protective gloves. Don't be embarrassed. If you can't get gloves, don't touch keypads and screens at the bank or store without covering your finger with a tissue. Try to cough or sneeze into two or three tissues, it says. If you don't have them, do it in the crook of your arm, as they say. But stop patting the other person's coat sleeves affectionately when you don't shake hands. That's where the germs are. So forget about the holy kiss on the cheek, as Paul said. Forget about shaking hands as a Western custom. And don't even touch the coat sleeve of someone else. One can imagine what these new self-appointed health officials would say about Jesus Christ laying hands on the sick and offering up the prayer of faith. We've heard a lot, at least in the United States, from Dr. Anthony Fauci. He's of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, so he's the expert. Everyone looks to him. He's been on all the talk shows. He was on all the shows yesterday. And what did he say yesterday? He said, if it looks like you're overreacting, you're probably doing the right thing. These are the shepherds saying that if you're not overreacting, then you're not behaving the right way. That's from America's leading expert on infectious disease. He was asked yesterday about the threat that this virus poses to young people. And here's what he had to say. Clip three.
There are going to be people who are young who are going to wind up getting seriously ill. So protect yourself. But remember, you could also be a vector or a carrier. And even though you don't get seriously ill, you could bring it to a person who would bring it to a person that would bring it to your grandfather, your grandmother, or your elderly relative.
This really is astounding to me, because just going back a few weeks ago, we heard little, precious little about quarantine. Of course, in January and the first part of February, the major media, they weren't even concerned about corona because they were too busy with impeachment. But nothing about quarantine for months and months, for years and years. As I said last week, we used to celebrate our athletes when they played sick. Now we shut down the entire sports. We shut it all down. The entire season. The entire organization when there's sickness. Now you quarantine yourself even if you might get something. This is where we are today. And so they're there, the officials, saying, well, this one spreads more easily. The mortality rate among the elderly, it's higher, so we've got to be concerned. We've got to be doubly concerned. We've got to panic, in fact. If you're not overreacting, then something's wrong with you. And then here's the leading expert in the United States saying that young people, too, you should be very concerned. He's not out there saying, look, if you're young, the chances are this will not kill you at all. But the fact is, because of all of the sensationalism, there's a lot of people who think that once they get this disease or catch this virus, they are going to die. Here's the New York Times from yesterday. It says this is Europe's reaction. The shutdown of Europe expanded drastically on Saturday as more countries shuttered businesses, locked up borders, and chased people off streets and into their homes in a race to contain the growing threat of coronavirus. Talks about Spain and Italy and just these countries that are coming under lockdown. In France, it says, cafes and restaurants central to the country's soul and social life were ordered closed, along with most other non-essential businesses. Talks about the travel ban between the United States and Europe. Says across Europe, there was a widespread feeling that the health crisis flaying Italy for weeks has arrived at the doorsteps of its neighbors. So what are we to do? Well, we're just to shut everything down. That's man's solution. We're to put regular, ordinary life on hold. The CDC is now recommending, this is in the U.S., that all gatherings of over 50 people, this is something that can affect, it's already affected some of our congregations, just with communications we've had with meeting halls and such. The CDC is recommending that all gatherings of over 50 people, that we avoid that we cancel that in the weeks ahead. Who knows how long, but this is leading to, and we've already seen it in Italy and elsewhere, ghost towns, large cities that are just completely empty. And you've seen the pictures or the video from Italy. And there's some now, I saw it this morning, from Israel. People under quarantine that are out on their balconies singing or whatever. This is Chris Wallace on his program yesterday describing Washington, D.C. This is the capital city of the United States. Clip four.
I have to tell you, I had to go up to the Hill today to do some work on the House side, and the House is in session. Washington, here on Capitol Hill, was like a ghost town. on a Friday midday. There were no cars on the street. The halls in Congress were largely empty. It was quite astonishing the degree to which, you know, we talk about social distancing and teleworking, that it's already begun to happen.
Social separation, cancel every major event, no sports. You go to ESPN and the sports story there, one of the headlines is about a referee that tested negative for the virus. That's the sports news for today. No sporting events, no public gatherings, closing the shops, closing the theaters, closing the restaurants, panic buying at the supermarkets. The shepherds are saying, be afraid. Be very afraid. Not of some of these other things that kill tens of thousands of people every year. Certainly not of some of these other social ills that we have as a society. But of this, be very, very afraid. That's what we've decided. This is the Illinois governor, Governor Pritzker. He's calling for the people of Illinois to make some very difficult sacrifices. Here's what he had to say over the weekend, clip 5.
We saw a lot of crowds out and about today, and I need to be frank. We can have a massive positive effect on bending the transmission curve, thereby saving lives, if people will take this seriously. We have seen positive results in countries that took aggressive action, and we have seen tragic outcomes in countries that did not. If you are young and healthy, listen up. We need you to follow social distancing guidelines too. You may only have mild symptoms for a few days and may think that you're just fine, but you can have the unintended tragic effect of spreading COVID-19 to others who may be more vulnerable. Please, please do the right thing for your community, for your friends, and for your family. So once again, no matter how healthy you feel, if you can, stay home.
No matter how healthy you feel, stay home. So the quarantine admonition now is for the healthy. This is the overreaction that Dr. Fauci recommended. If you're overreacting, you're probably doing the right thing. If you're feeling good, if you're feeling healthy, if you're young, stay home. Don't go anywhere. Listen to Representative Presley. She comes from Massachusetts, and she's concerned about coronavirus in the prison system. Here's what she said over the weekend, clip 6.
Given the crowding and overpopulating in our prisons, for a confluence of other reasons that we won't get into in this interview, Rev, but you are certainly well aware of, are an ecosystem and a petri dish for the spreading of this pandemic, which is why I partnered with my colleagues, Representative Velasquez, Ocasio-Cortez, and Tlaib, to lobby the Bureau of Prisons to use their full power and to communicate guidance for how we will contain and mitigate this epidemic behind the wall. Specifically, do they have access to testing? Secondly, has anyone already tested positive? And what are the quarantine measures? Again, given the overpopulating and the fact that many of these facilities are already subpar and that incarcerated men and women do not have access to soap, to alcohol-based hand sanitizers, to regular showers, what is the guidance, both for those that are incarcerated and for staff? And that the BOP use their full powers, I think now would be the time to commute some sentences, to exact clemency, and to take care of our most vulnerable.
So if you're, says the Illinois governor, if you're healthy, if you're a healthy law-abiding citizen, stay at home, self-quarantine, put yourself under house arrest. If you're a criminal in a prison without hand sanitizers, well, you've got to be let loose in the view of this woman and her other friends in Congress. These are the leaders. These are the representatives. of the American people working at Washington, D.C. These are the rules that the shepherds are coming up with. How moved with compassion are we for righteous leadership, for the leadership of Jesus Christ as King of Kings, for the establishment of God's kingdom on earth? This is what the sheep are being told. Look, if you're overreacting, you're on the right track. Peggy Noonan said last week, those who say don't panic are giving terrible advice. That's her view. If you're out there saying, look, don't panic, that is the worst advice you could give to someone. Now is the time to panic, they say. Listen to the New York Times panicking away. It says, projections based on CDC scenarios show a potentially vast toll between 160 million and 214 million people in the United States could be infected over the course of the epidemic. So you had Rashid Tlaib last year. She threw out 150 million. Well, I think I heard one of the congressional doctors say it could be 150 million. And the press, they take it and run with it. 150 million, that's half the nation. As it turns out, that was a conservative estimate for these people estimating the worst case scenario. 160 million to 214 million people in the United States. It says later on, as many as 200,000 to 1.7 million people could die. That's what we're expecting, says the New York Times. It says here, in the calculations based on the CDC scenario suggested 2.4 million to 21 million people in the U.S. Could require hospitalization, potentially crushing the nation's medical system, which has only about 925,000 staffed hospital beds. So we could have 21 million patients in need of hospital beds. And we've got less than a million. How are we going to handle this? That's one of the featured articles. The email that they send me each day for the New York Times, it has three of the top stories right at the top of their email. And this was one of them Saturday. So I assume it's above the fold. Front page, New York Times. We could be looking at 214 million people getting this. We could have 1.77 million people die from this. How are we going to have enough hospital beds? A UK official, this leaked out to the media. I saw this tweet last night. This could last till next spring, so a full year. Could lead to 7.9 million people being hospitalized. So that's even a higher percentage, I guess, than the United States, because Britain has, I guess, about 70 million people. The U.S. has 330 million people. The Guardian suggests as many as 80% of Britons becoming infected with the virus over that time. 80% of Britons. Over the next year. Well, switching back to Governor Pritzker from Illinois, listen again to what he said over the weekend, clip 7.
During this crisis, my administration is working to ensure that those who fear that they may be getting sick will have access to the testing and treatment that they need without being saddled with costly medical bills for their care.
Here again. Those who fear that they may be getting sick. If you are afraid, and why should you have any reason to be afraid? But if you are afraid that you might be sick, rest assured we're going to have those tests for you. Everything will be paid for. Is it any wonder why so many people are afraid? why so many people are panic buying, emptying the shelves of toilet paper? Here again, from Saturday's New York Times, it says, the scene inside one crowded store, there was no chicken available, nor garbanzo beans or chips. Another had no flu or cold medicines. They grabbed milk and aspirin, paper towels and spaghetti, cans of soup and bottles of laundry detergent, olive oil and sanitizing wipes. With futures suddenly thrust into the unknown, they did what felt reassuring. Panic shop! It says, as President Trump declared a national emergency on Friday, hordes of shoppers flooded stores across the nation and emptied shelves looking to stockpile groceries and household items to prepare for uncharted territory. We've got to prepare. We're talking about millions of people dying. If they only knew the problems that we're really and truly facing. But the things that get people whipped up into a frenzy, a lot of this boils down to dreadful leadership. Mob rule, basically. I tell you, we'd all do ourselves a favor if we'd just switch off the cable news networks and turn off social media. Look at someone comes along like Devin Nunes. I've got a clip of him later. He's basically saying, look, we've got to just use common sense. Wash our hands, but you can still go out. You can still go out to restaurants and, oh, the mob didn't like that. No, you can't do that. We've got to self-quarantine. We're all under house arrest. This is an epidemic like no other epidemic, they say ignorantly. The Spanish flu killed 50 million people. This is right on the heels of the First World War. It killed something like 10 times as many people as the First World War. Nearly as many as the Second World War. Are we really able to cope with that if this is the way we react to 6,500 so far? We've got to prepare. This is going to go on and on and on. These are the public health officials. These are the governors. These are the leaders of states and federal government levels. Listen to Governor Cuomo of New York over the weekend, clip 8.
I don't believe that this is going to be a short-term issue. I think we're looking at a matter of months, and people should start to calibrate that into their expectation. I think this could be a 6, 7, 8, 9 month affair, watching the trajectory of the virus. So I think people should start to recognize that. This is not going to be over in 30 days. It's not going to be over in a couple of weeks.
It's going to go on for months and months and months. Bloomberg had a headline saying coronavirus will change how we shop, travel, and work for years. For years and years and years. To Peggy Noonan, as I say, if you say don't panic, that is terrible advice. She says in the past few days, the World Health Organization declared a pandemic. The physician used by Congress reportedly said behind closed doors that 70 to 150 million Americans will be infected. Well, we've got to up that now. The New York Times said on Saturday it's actually more like 160 to 214 million. It may be. Now, she used the word reportedly. The New York Times says it may be. Don't you know? It says the Harvard epidemiology. The word I have trouble pronouncing, Mark Lipsitch, he estimated 20% to 60% of adults worldwide might catch the disease. 60% of the global population, says health professionals and scientists have been on TV explaining what they know, and they've been impressive, crisply professional. All the experts, she says, Donald Trump has not been impressive. No, he's told one lie after another. But the healthcare professionals, the experts, They've been very impressive, crisply professional, she says, helpful in conveying the contour of things. I saw a clip of Governor DeWine of Ohio. I'll play some of him in just a moment. But he was asked a question and basically said, you know, he came to the press conference with his expert, the healthcare official. And he basically said, I really don't know, but this trusted healthcare professional, she does. And it was Ohio, remember? Sometime last week. So what, 4, 5, 6 days ago when they said there's 100,000 people in Ohio that already have it. They just haven't been detected yet. Here's Governor DeWine. He's a Republican. Clip 9.
It was clear that we had to take this action in regard to our schools. As Dr. Acton indicated, you know, we project we have about 100,000 people at least who already are walking around with the coronavirus. And what the experts tell us is that this number will double every 6 days. So if you just think about that, you can extrapolate that out. You know, we're into some tough times in Ohio.
It's going to double every 6 days. It's already at 100,000 last week. So I guess it's near the point of 200,000 now. The experts have told us this. Every 6 days. Now, last night, he came out, the governor of Ohio, and he said, we're going to be closing all the bars, all the restaurants, starting at 9 p.m. tonight. They're just going to leave them open for carryout or delivery. And that's it. The governor said, I'm aware that this will impact many, many good workers. I can't tell you how sorry I am, but we will work to mitigate the suffering. It's our goal for everyone to get through this. Every day we delay, more people will die. And yet, at the same time, every day that we continue with this mass hysteria, you have people getting laid off from airlines, from supermarkets, from restaurants. This is the price that we're willing to pay, I guess. The self-inflicted harm that we're putting upon ourselves. Noonan says last week, scientists and doctors say the next few weeks are crucial, that the virus's spread must be slowed. We have to slow it, she says. We have to be health hawks, bite the bullet, close the schools a few weeks and see where we are, cancel celebrations. She said, make the birthday bash twice as good next year. Put everything on pause. Put everything on pause. Don't lead a regular life anymore. Now, listen, we on this program have often said we do need to change our lives. We do need to make some adjustments. We need to look at ourselves. If there are some takeaways from this, spiritually speaking. There are some lessons that we should be considering. There's no doubt about that. But look at what this is exposing. Just our blind faith in government officials. Our trust is in man. It's like Richard Pommel said in his trumpet brief just last week. When everything goes wrong, it's the government's fault. And even when it goes right, there's something wrong with the government. They could have done it better. We don't look at ourselves. You look at a lot of what you're hearing. It's basically be afraid. You should panic. And what do you not hear? You hear nothing about the cause of sickness. You don't even hear anything about the cause as far as where this started. You've got to steer clear of China. And there's certainly nothing there about repentance or obedience to God's laws of health. Where are the counselors? Where are the health officials saying, look, at this time, more than ever, we should be, more than any other, we should be more concerned about proper diet, clean and unclean meats. Supposing it did start from eating bats or snakes at that Wuhan meat market. Well, that right there, the cause, you're eating something that God says is not to be eaten. Now, if it started in the bio lab across the street in Wuhan, there's some laws being broken there as well. But nothing about the health laws that will enable us to avoid disease and sickness. Plenty of water, fresh air, exercise, sleep. and yes, a positive outlook. Mr. Armstrong talked about that as well. This mass hysteria, this throwing fuel on the fire to make everyone afraid, that actually makes the problem worse, much worse, even physically. What did that governor of Illinois say? Hey, if you fear that you might be sick, we want to make sure that we've got testing for you. And this is where we are today. Shut it down. Put everything on pause. Noonan says, sometimes paranoia is just good sense. This is a leading commentator. Used to work in the Reagan administration. She used to write for Ronald Reagan. And she's saying, you know what? Paranoia is a good idea. Well, she talks about people who say don't panic and the abundance of caution. We need to eliminate those phrases from our language at this moment. So if you're out there encouraging a calm and rational response to the spread of disease, then you are, in the words of Peggy Noonan, you are a coward. You're part of the problem. You represent a grave danger to society. Listen to Washington Post columnist Jennifer Rubin, what she said about those that would, in her words, I guess, downplay this disease. Clip 10.
And when you think about it, which party immediately canceled all of their rallies? Which party immediately started having their political figures really portray and use their lives as an example? It was the Democrats. So there are going to be, I hate to put it in these terms, there can be less Democrat deaths because of there will be less mass gatherings. There will be less opportunities for people to congregate and share this horrible disease.
So more Republicans are going to die because they haven't been as careful, I guess, with large gatherings. What was it Rahm Emanuel said many years ago? Never let a crisis go to waste. And that's what we're seeing here. This is why they're so giddy at CNN and MSNBC, because this is the crisis. The way they view it, this is the one that could finally bring down the president. This is the one that could finally lead to a recession. That could finally get us a Democrat in office this November. Can't let this go to waste. What an opportunity. Here's the mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio, saying that, look, this is full crisis footing for New Yorkers. Clip 11.
I said to you all yesterday and other times, we're going into a full crisis footing. This is a wartime dynamic. We have to think about helping each other in different ways.
A wartime dynamic. This is like, and I've heard others, commentators say that this is like World War II. Think of it. Londoners hunkering down because they're literally being bombed from the air. And then rising from the rubble to see what's left. A wartime footing. You wonder what, there's not many of them left, but you wonder what veterans of World War II would think about the reaction to this virus, because coronavirus is shutting down the United States in ways that World War II never did. I mentioned last week the example with 9/11. It's shutting down New York in ways that 9/11 didn't. How it makes you wonder, what would the response be today to something like 9/11? I was thinking last night about that article from the New York Post. I went through it on the anniversary of 9/11. Just last year, so the 18th anniversary. And it was about this New Yorker, or at least it quoted from this New Yorker who, I guess, has been in the city, New York City, for 30 years. So she was there through 9/11, 20 years ago, 19 years ago, through to today. She said in this article, "I'm looking at my city now, and I'm horrified. The streets are filthy, the cops can't do anything, the homeless situation is beyond tragic, and there's a hostility and violence in the air that I have not felt since I moved to Manhattan 30 years ago. To be honest, walking to work today, I thought to myself, why did I work so hard and choose to fight to stay here? This is what my city has become. A place for people who are not from New York, who are either extremely wealthy or extremely poor, a city where the rules no longer apply." And the Post article concludes with this: 18 years after its worst day, the city faces a new crisis. This one is self-inflicted. 18 and a half years ago, after 9/11, you actually saw a lot of New Yorkers banding together. There were certainly some criminal elements mixed in. There always is some of that. But you saw a lot of people, the mayor of New York, Mayor Giuliani, you saw George W. Bush. You saw them rallying the troops, so to speak, on top of that rubble. You saw New Yorkers saying, we've got to get back to normalcy. We've got to get back to regular events. We've got to get back to regular life. So much so that we at the Trumpet were saying, look, don't miss the opportunity here to pause a little bit and to reflect on why this happened. But now we're at the other extreme. Now it's full-fledged panic. Now it's empty the shelves. Now it's just run into the supermarket. It doesn't even matter what you need. Just grab stuff off the shelves. We could be looking at millions of deaths. Hundreds of millions infected. What a difference between the America of today and the one of just 18, 19 years ago. Here we are today, just a complete and total surrender to fear and paranoia, and then commentators, well-known ones at that, saying, hey, paranoia, that's good. That's what we need. If someone says, don't panic, well, he's a coward. Of course, she's aiming that at the president. He's a coward. Bite the bullet, she says, and she's not alone. Quarantine yourself. Give in to that fear, that worry, that mass hysteria. Go ahead and get behind the national lockdown. This is what we've got to do. We're all Italy, after all. We're 2 weeks away from where Italy is today. And why is Italy the way it is today? 60 million people. 20 to 40,000. It's the same like the United States. You have a bad flu season, you could lose up to 30 or 40,000 Italian citizens. That's true. And so, yes, as bad as it was yesterday, all total, it's at 18, 1900. Mostly elderly, mostly over the age of 80. And Italy itself has one of the oldest populations in the world. In fact, it's second to Japan. And not many people know as well that it has quite a Chinese population, a big Chinese population in northern Italy. That's where they locked everything down first. But we can't talk about that because, well, you can't even mention Wuhan without being labeled a racist. You certainly don't want to go back to root causes where this all started. And never mind the aging population. Never mind the fact that they've got a single-payer system in Italy. Everybody's paying into the system, and we've been told that that's supposed to solve these kinds of problems. As it is, they're having to turn people away. You've heard the stories. Not enough beds, not enough ventilators. And who are they turning away? The ones that are the most vulnerable, the old people. That's the way it works in socialized medicine. So there's lots of things to discuss here as to why it's as bad as it is in Italy. Keeping in mind the perspective of other causes of death in the world today. But even to key in on Italy, for the sake of keying in on Italy, there are those just screaming that we're going to be where Italy is in just 2 weeks because we got a late start. Well, we'll see, I guess. We'll see in a couple weeks. Heather McDonald, she wrote at the New Criterion. So far, the United States has seen 41 deaths. Now, that's been, that she wrote this last week, so 67, I think it is. 29 of those deaths occurred in one poorly run nursing home outside of Seattle. Another 9 deaths occurred in the rest of Washington State, leaving 10 deaths, 4 in California, 2 in Florida, and 1 in each of Georgia, Kansas, New Jersey, and South Dakota, she says. She doesn't even mention Ohio. Ohio, remember, we were told last week Ohio had 100,000 cases undetected, and yet no deaths, as I said last week. If you say it was there in Italy for longer than we realize, or if you say the same thing for Ohio, well, then that suddenly makes the mortality rate or the lethality of this particular virus not as potent as many have said at the same time. In any event, she says, of 325 million residents in the U.S., this represents roughly 0.000012% of the U.S. population. Much has been made, says Heather McDonald, of the exponential rate of infection in European and Asian countries, as if the spread of all transmittable diseases did not develop along geometric as opposed to arithmetic growth patterns. What actually matters is whether or not the growing pandemic overwhelms our ability to ensure the well-being of U.S. residents with efficiency and precision. But fear of the disease, listen to this, fear of the disease and not the disease itself has already spoiled that for us. And then she talks about if the chances were to jump 10,000-fold. In other words, if she had a 0.12% chance of getting this instead of a 0.00012 chance, she writes, I'd happily take those odds over the destruction being wrought on the U.S. and global economy from this unbridled panic. Unbridled panic. And then she gets into some of the facts and figures that I mentioned at the top of the show. The number of traffic fatalities every year. She says further on, there have been 6,500 deaths worldwide so far. I just updated the figures for her. Also, a fraction of traffic deaths worldwide, a fraction of traffic deaths worldwide. And unlike coronavirus, driving kills indiscriminately, mowing down the young and the old, the sick and the healthy. The coronavirus, by comparison, is targeted in its lethality, overwhelmingly striking the elderly or the already severely sick. It says, if the measures we undertake to protect a vulnerable few end up exposing them, along with the rest of society, to even more damaging risks, was it worth the cost? Have we considered the cost here, she says? She says later on, President Trump has been criticized for not being apocalyptic enough in his press conferences. In fact, he should be even more skeptical of the panic than he has been. He should relentlessly put the coronavirus risk into context with opioid deaths, homicide deaths, about 16,000 a year in the U.S., flu deaths, and traffic deaths. Rather than indiscriminately shutting down public events and travel, we should target prevention where it's most needed. Nursing homes and hospitals. That's where it's most needed. Listen to this conclusion. It's hard to imagine that the panicked leaders and populace of today would have been able to triumph in the last century's world wars. America's colleges sent off thousands of their young men to fight and die in those wars. Those students went off with conviction and courage. Currently, colleges and universities are shutting down with no hint of the virus in their vicinity. Not even a hint of it. She concludes here, would today's panicked leaders and populace be able to triumph in the face of a world war or some other legitimately comparable threat? She says, let's hope that we do not have to find out. Let's hope, she says, that we don't have to find out. Which brings me to the point I made last week. If this is the reaction to a virus that over the past 3 months has killed 6,500 people, what can we expect when we're hit with much worse? You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit some feedback, you can email us at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you tomorrow.